You can believe in creation and not be an idiot. Find out what I mean on this episode of Pushback. If you're concerned about the direction our culture is heading, then maybe it's time to push back. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Johnny, and this is another episode of Pushback. I have a real challenge this week. I've been approached by my youth pastor daughter, Emma, to speak to her youth group in 1 week. And she gave me the topic of creation versus evolution. It's a big topic, and she's really only given me about 25 to 30 minutes to do that. So the thought I had was my podcast is about 25 minutes. And it's kind of one of those elevator pitch moments where if you have 25 minutes to talk to young people about creation versus evolution, what would you say? And this is my challenge. And so I'm going to present that to you this week of what I'm going to share to the youth group, because this is right down the center of what I've been talking about for this entire year. And the timing is perfect because I've just transitioned into the second P of the year, which is pseudoscience, and how pseudoscience is influencing our children. And the result of it is it's killing them. It's killing our kids. It's a simple lie that's been propagated in this realm of not science, but pseudoscience. And the result of it has been catastrophic. And there are just a few areas in our culture where we can, I believe that we can put our finger on, like put our finger on saying that is one of the things that if that could change, it could transform our culture. It can transform the psyche of our young people and actually save their lives. And I believe this topic is one of those. My daughter at Youth Group has done a series on worldview and why it's so important. And that's where I'm going to start. So this is probably the warm introduction that I would do at Youth Group anyway about this time. So we'll see how I do on time. And I'm going to share with you what I'm going to share with them. So my daughter has been sharing about worldview, and worldview is so important. It's the lenses in which we look at the place, the world, the environment, the culture in which we live. And when we talk about evolution versus creationism, this is really about worldview. This is about starting points. Evolution is a worldview that starts with the premise that there cannot be a God. That's the starting point. Their scientific quote-unquote evidence says everything we see must come to be by natural causes. So that's their starting point. Creationism is also a worldview that starts with the premise that God made the heavens and the earth. Our scientific evidence points to a creator. Now, here's the key part, is that they aren't different evidences. It's the same evidence, just different worldview. It's just a different lens in which we look at the information. So which is true? Well, it's interesting because both viewpoints, both lenses require faith, because we weren't there. So enter the world of science. Now, science is a discovery of our world based on what we can observe and test. And I love science. I'm a scientist. I wear a scientific hat. I go to work every day operating in the realm of science and the things that I've learned about creation. And it's interesting because both worldviews have a premise that actually bridges this gap of the fact that we weren't there. With us, we say, with God, all things are possible. The evolutionists say, given enough time, all things are possible. See, they both require a leap of faith. So the question is, what is evolution? What are they trying to portray to us as evolutionists? Well, if you looked at evolution, it would be presented as a fact, most likely everywhere you go, certainly in your high school science class, in museums, anywhere science is presented, it's presented with such certainty that you would think it's a law of science. Well, is it a law? Well, I could have a ping pong ball in my hand and I could drop it here on this table and it would drop every single time I let go of it. It would drop against the table. I'd pick it up again. I'd let go of it. It would drop again. That's something that I can observe and I can test, and it's called the law of gravity. It's a scientific law, and it's going to happen every single time I let go of the ball. And it's based on a scientific method. Scientific method is formulation of a problem, collection of data through observation and experiment, and the formulation and testing of a hypothesis. Well, law of gravity is pretty easy to prove. And there isn't any scientist on the planet that I believe would argue that. So is evolution a law or fact like they claim it to be? Well, it's based on repeated experiments or observations. That's what makes a fact, that describe or predict a range of natural phenomenon. So it doesn't do that because we can't experiment. We can't show what happened at the beginning. We can't do experiments or observations on evolution. We could try, but guess what? They haven't shown anything. There's a lack of a case for evolution by the fact that no one has ever seen it happen. That makes it pseudoscience. Since there's no real scientific evidence that evolution is occurring at present or ever occurred in the past. It makes you scratch your head, doesn't it? How are scientists relating this as a fact or even a scientific law when it can't be observed, it's not being seen now, and it wasn't being seen back then? So is evolution a theory? Well, a scientific theory is a well-substantiated explanation of some aspect of the natural world based on body of facts that have been repeatedly confirmed through observation and experiment. Whoops, I guess that doesn't really fall under the case category of theory as well. Is it a philosophy? Well, a philosophy is a study of theoretical basis of a particular branch of knowledge. Well, for something to be theoretical, it has to be observed through experimentation or observation. So I'm not even sure philosophy fits. What about the definition of religion? A religion is a set of beliefs concerning the origin, cause, nature, and purpose of the universe. Interesting, isn't it? It's almost a little sobering because when we go to high school science class, I believe we're actually entering a religion. See, evolution is a godless religion. And what I would like to convey to you today is really bad science. Because as science, it is filled with so many holes that to teach it as a scientist is actually embarrassing, honestly. And the scientists know it. And that's why they're trying to cram evolution down the throat of you, students, of teachers, of scientists. You either go along with our religion or you don't get paid. You lose your job or you're called an idiot. Well, there are more holes in the religion of evolution. There are more holes than a championship golf course. There's more holes than my son's socks or my daughter's jeans. There are more holes than a block of Swiss cheese. There are more holes than a wiffle ball. More holes than ear piercings. More holes than a bowl of Cheerios. More holes than a prairie dog colony. More holes than a donut counter. And my favorite, more holes than a Green Bay Packers defense. Oh, it makes me so happy. See, evolution is a godless religion and really bad science. So why are we still talking about it? Because they've proven nothing. That's why we're still having this conversation. That's why I, as a scientist, as a reputable scientist, can stand up in front of you, even in this podcast, and say, they've proven nothing. Like any religion, it requires faith to believe. And here's the punchline: way more faith than it does to believe in creation in the Bible, without a doubt. So I want to give you four scientific holes in the evolutionary religion. Just four. There's countless, and I could sit here for hours and give you irrefutable, quote unquote, evidence that evolution does not hold up. So many holes. So, but let me just give you four. That should just be plenty because all you need is one. But let me give you four. Number one, fossils do not show evolution. See, you would think in the fossil record, which evolutionists point to so often, that over time, over hundreds of millions of years of biology, that we would see countless, endless transitional fossils in the fossil record. What do I mean by transitional fossils? I mean fossils that show one species turning into a different species, one animal kind transitioning into another animal kind. There should be fossil records all over the place of these transitional species. But what do we see instead? We see the kinds talked about in Genesis. Of course we do. That's what we see. That's observational fact. There should be endless transitional fossil records. Not only endless transitional fossil records, but endless transitional species still present today. But instead, we see the kinds. Unrelated kinds. They all show a common creator, created similarly, but not the same. Number two, living creatures do not evolve between kinds. Experiments were designed to detect evolution should have caught a glimpse by now, but they have not. While researchers stimulated fruit fly evolution by systematically altering each portion of the fruit fly DNA. And guess what they found? Three resulting fruit fly categories: normal, mutant, or dead. Not transitioning into something else, not becoming highly evolved, but either normal, the same, mutant, or dead. A 2010 study found no net fruit fly evolution after 600 generations. You think you would see something by then? See, you can look at the different kinds of dogs and say, how did this happen? Clearly, this is evidence of evolution because dogs have transitioned into all sorts of different varieties of dogs. And that can be explained by genetic mumbo jumbo, genetic shifting and jumbling. It can be explained by genetic mutation. But guess what? At the end of the day, they're still dogs. They don't change. They don't magically change into something different that requires different genetics completely. No, there's just mutations that take place. And that's why you see different varieties. That's why you saw different varieties of the COVID virus. But guess what? At the end of the day, it's still a virus. And it actually became less virulent, more mutated, and hopefully ultimately dead. Those are the options. That's what we see. This is observational science that we're testing right now in real time. And there's no evidence. It's a big hole in evolution. There are no transitional species. And they do not evolve between kinds, which is exactly what we learned in the Bible. But I think this is probably the most, compelling piece of evidence because it deals with scientific law. There's something called entropy, and I want you to remember this word, entropy. Entropy is a factor in physics indicating that the whole universe of matter is running down and ultimately will reduce itself to uniform chaos. This follows the second law of thermodynamics. Remember what a law is, which seems about as basic and unquestionable to modern scientific minds as any truth can be. And evolutionists would say at the same time that this is happening on the physical level of existence, something quite different magically seems to be happening on the biological level. Structure and species are becoming more complex, more sophisticated, more organized, with higher degrees of performance and consciousness. The law of entropy is a universal law of decreasing complexity, whereas evolution is supposed to be a universal law of increasing complexity. This breaks scientific law. Now, there is something called genetic entropy, which is exactly what we see. Genetic entropy refutes evolution by ensuring that information is constantly garbled and by limiting the total generations to far fewer than evolutionary history requires. See, genetically, we do get mixed up and garbled within our own kind. Excuse me. However, it's loss of genetic information, not gaining of genetic information. Mutations then are passed on from generation to generation, and individuals carry their own mutations plus those inherited from all prior genetic information. And over time, what we're seeing is decreasing complexity, not increasing. It's exactly what we would expect to see. And to believe anything else is to actually break the law of science. Then why are we teaching it? It's because it's a religion, not science. See, I believe that Adam and Eve were created as the most genetically perfect human beings that have ever walked the planet. And ever since sin and death has entered into the world following the Garden of Eden, there has been decreasing genetic complexity, not increasing. And finally, the fourth one just goes with simple human common sense. If we think about this, this idea of molecules to man, this idea of one kind of animal or creature mysteriously transitioning into another, makes no sense. It's called an all or nothing vital features, and it refutes evolution. For example, a reptile two-way lung could not morph into a bird's unique one-way lung. The reptile would have to stop breathing while it waited for evolution to either construct or transfer function to new bones, air sacs, parabronchi, required by the new bird system. Such a creature would suffocate in minutes, ending its evolution. I don't mean to chuckle, but it's so preposterous. Why would a fish want to flop out of the water and somehow walk on land with some kind of rudimentary flipper floppers on their arms and legs? How is that an evolutionary advantage? They were doing very well in the ocean, thank you very much. Why is that a positive? An amphibian's three-chambered heart to a mammal's four-chambered heart would require either a new internal heart wall that would block vital blood flow, or a new heart vessels that would fatally disrupt the amphibian's vital blood flow. It doesn't work. And not only, let's think about this, not only would this creature have to mysteriously create these new body parts, but they would have to find another creature to mate with that would also mysteriously transition new body parts. It's one thing to magically appear. It's another thing to have two things magically appear that actually find each other, fall in love, and mate. I'm mocking this a little bit because it's so preposterous. And it's embarrassing that it's being taught. These four observations show why unbiblical evolutionary ideas that creatures change without limits is unscientific. It doesn't line up with science. And I could go on and on. I could talk about the clotting mechanisms in the human body. If one of the little pieces are missing, we die. We could look at the human eye or the ear and have no explanation for how those could randomly appear over time because of incredible complexity. I could talk to you about DNA transcription. What DNA transcribes is actually the protein that's needed to actually transcribe it. It's the classic chicken and the egg. How can that happen? Through evolution. We can talk about the Human Genome Project, which was supposed to show evolutionary lines in races, probably 5, 6, 7 different races the evolutionists thought would show in the Human Genome Project as we're mapping our DNA. Guess what it showed? One race called the human race. That lines up with the Bible. There's something called the Anthropic Principle, which is such a beautiful picture of the hand of God. The Anthropic Principle is all the thousands or hundreds of thousands of factors that have to come into place for the Earth to sustain life. the unique properties of water, Earth's atmosphere, Earth's reflectivity, Earth's magnetic field, Earth's place in the solar system, our solar system's place in the galaxy, even the color of our sun, if any of those things are just slightly off, any one factor, it is unsustainable for life. It's just small samples of many factors which must be right in order for life to exist on Earth. We are very fortunate to live on a privileged planet, in a privileged solar system, in a privileged galaxy, in a privileged universe. So either we are here by fortuitous luck against tremendous odds, or by the purposeful design of an intelligent agent. All evolution can tell us is time plus chance, primordial soup, dumb luck, billions of years. My friends, it takes a lot more faith to believe their religion. And don't believe it. So what about creationism? Are there holes in creation? No, not even one. It's because God made it that way. And with God, all things are possible. But here's the crazy part. We don't even have to defend it. Because it's not what it's being taught. Your science teachers need to be held accountable for the crap that they're teaching. That's what they're teaching. That's what they're trying to convince you is fact and absolute truth. But what they're telling you is a crazy amount of lies and religion. Creationism is also a theory because we weren't there, but we do have an ancient text that tells us how it happened. In seven literal days, about 6,000 years ago. And we can believe it. The first creation account is divided into 7 days. Day one, the sky. Day two, the earth, seas, and vegetation. Day three, the sun and the moon. Day four, animals of the air and the sea. Day five, I did this completely wrong. God creates light, day one, the sky, day two, the earth, the seas, and vegetation, day three, the sun and moon, day four, animals and of the air and sea, day five, the land animals and humans, day six. Maybe I did do it right. God rested from his work on the seventh day of creation. But here's the deal. The crescendo was you. Everything that was in God's mind was about you, made in his image. And science is the discovery and utilization of his magnificent creation. It's not science versus religion. It's science of the discovery of our faith and what he has created for us. I utilize science every day when I go to work to literally save lives, and of that I'm super grateful. See, we also have faith. Creationism also requires faith. That the Bible is true and that God made it that way. But science backs up the Bible in every single way without exception. The Bible, Noah's flood, all of these things can describe geologically, biologically, astronomically, all the things that we see here on this earth. It fits, it lines up, and so much better than this evolution garbage that's being transmitted to you. But here's the punchline, is that worldview matters. That's why my daughter, Pastor Emma, is relaying this to her youth group, because it matters. Teaching a lifeless, purposeless, hopeless existence to children every day, that their life is formed out of a primordial soup and they are a result of time plus chance, just a cosmic accident. Then the administrators of the school want the children to live with respect, hope, and purpose, and adhere to some sort of moral code toward one another. We are told that we are animals, and they expect us to not live like animals. We are told that there are higher forms of evolution, and expect us not to be racist. They teach the survival of the fittest, and then expect us to put others first, and be generous and compassionate. This is a real problem being manifested every day in your science class, and worldview matters. So here are three conclusions. Number one, evolution is really bad science. They are lying to you in order to expand their godless religion and worldview. Have your eyes open. Number two, there is no scientific burden or hurdle that needs to be overcome in order to believe the Bible. Some people would say, well, can't evolution and the Bible coexist? Can't God just have used evolution? But the only reason you would convey that or want to believe that is if you felt there was some scientific burden that needed to be overcome, that they've proven something that we as creationists need to reconcile with. There is no burden. There's no reconciliation that needs to take place. And to believe anything else is actually contrary to the word of God. Science confirms a biblical worldview. From beginning to end, the Bible can be trusted and is true. You can believe the Bible and not be an idiot. Number three, you are created by your Father in His image with immeasurable worth, identity, gifts, talents, destiny, and purpose. You are here on this earth for a divine reason and calling. That's what makes a difference. He made it all for you, and Jesus paid it all for you. John 1:1-3, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him, all things were made. Without Him, nothing was made that has been made. I think I did that in about 24 minutes. I think I did it. That's what I would convey. That's what I'm going to convey at the next youth group. It's critical information. And it's so important that our children understand who they are in the context of what they were created and placed into. It changes everything. Worldview does matter. Thank you for listening. This is a great podcast to share with a student, college student, high school student, anyone who is struggling with their purpose and existence here on this earth because they're getting a different message at school than they're getting at church, hopefully, and certainly from the Bible. But the Bible is critical and so important, and so is our worldview and how He created us to be. So share this podcast with as many as you can. And thank you for tuning in again. So until next week, let's go together now to set and shape the culture.